All right. And then probably my favorite element in Asylum is the on account of or nexus element. And this is also my, I've been doing this for a long time story, in that, you know, when I first started practicing, I don't know that anybody spent any time documenting or arguing nexus, because it was sort of morphed into the protected ground or the persecution in ways, and we as attorneys didn't really have to advocate. It was sort of circumstantial. It was there. We all understood it. And I feel like with the board precedent that's come out in the last 5 years and the evolving types of claims that we're seeing from Central America, nexus is critical. Nexus makes or breaks your case. If you look at both board, but especially federal circuit court law, where they're constantly denying particular social group claims based on family or kinship ties or on gender or domestic violence, many times it's not about the actual particular social group. It's because you failed on nexus. You weren't able to link the persecution to the protected ground. So it's really important and very critical that you spend a lot of time in your case identifying nexus and being able to get your client to testify or answer questions at the interview about nexus. So making that linkage very clear and arguing that linkage in your brief or your closing statement. Just also a reminder that your applicant is not required to show that it is the only reason they were targeted by the persecutor, right? The test is the one central reason test. So a persecutor can have mixed motives for targeting your client. You need only show that it was one central reason for being targeted. And to, again, remind the adjudicator of that. And I think this is where preparing your client for the hearing and or the interview is really key, because this is something that I think is very hard for asylum applicants to put into word and to understand the importance of. So as attorneys, it is really important that we spend some time identifying and helping our clients testify about nexus. I also like to talk about what I call evolving nexus, and making sure that you are questioning your client about possibly evolving nexus. I'll give the example. Your client is from Honduras. The gang targeted her because she was a single mother who owned a little bodega that she, you know, had out of her house, and extorted her for taxes or for renta, demanding that she pay it, right? She refuses to pay it. And when she refuses to pay it, she says out loud on a street corner where everyone could hear, "I'm against everything this gang stands for. I oppose everything you do. You're a scourge on our society," right? Where is the nexus and where is the motive, right? It evolves over time. When they first targeted her and demanded money and extorted her for money, they did it because she was a business owner, because she was a single mom, all right? That is one nexus. But when she said out loud on a street corner, "No," and then they came and targeted her, her family, your motivation has changed, right? And so you need to get the adjudicator to understand that initial motivation has now changed, right? The reason they attacked her, the reason they assaulted her, the reason why they killed her daughter was because she said out loud on a street corner, "No." All right, so be aware of evolving nexus and make sure you point that out to the adjudicator. And again, prepare your clients to testify or answer questions about that at the interview. All right, protected grounds for asylum. I think everyone knows the 5 protected grounds. Just want to make a note that it can be both actual or imputed. In the case of political opinion, I think many of us know that it can be an imputed political opinion. What does the persecutor think is your political opinion or your political affiliation controls? But this can apply to the other grounds. So I have successfully made cases based on imputed family membership, even though they weren't actually part of the family, imputed sexual orientation. So please know that the imputed protected grounds can be made not just for political opinion, but in particular social groups. You do have to develop that case and prepare it, and again, prepare your client to be able to explain it, but know that that exists. PSGs, right? So, you know, we all started with Matter of Acosta, awesome. We just had to show that our client was a member of a group that shared these common immutable characteristics that were so inherent to them that they could not change or should not be required to change. And there was a lot of uncertainty about that, but great, we were making those claims. And then in 2014, the BIA released a series of cases which added these second two prongs to the PSG test, which is particularity and social distinction. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about the nuances of PSGs and these three prongs, and we'll talk about it more when we talk about matter of LEA a little bit later. But I guess my, you know, three or a few tips to kind of take away from this is that we're in a day and age when we need to be spending time refining those proposed particular social groups, offering up different particular social groups, right, and being able to argue for each one that they're immutable, they're particular, and they're socially distinct. You know, I think you can use the good case law to help guide us in what could or, you know, couldn't work, but I think it's always really important to use the bad case law to our advantage, too, and to distinguish. I give the case of last year, I won a taxi driver, member of a taxi cooperative asylum case, because I was able to distinguish it from Matter of Acosta, right, where it was about immutability. Use the bad case law and distinguish those cases if you can, all right? Again, we'll talk about Matter of LEA a little bit later.